to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or favorite recipe, please contact us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about education. And we sometimes get questions. In fact, it was a little bit of a debate already because we announced the topics ahead of time about how the traditional levels of education, a degree, for example, from something, makes a difference in the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. And whether it really affects it, if someone has a higher level of education, a college degree, a specialty degree, a professional degree, something like that. So, what educations do we usually encounter when we do groups? Mediation within our context, mediation, groups, seminars, workshops, turnip to dispute resolution. What kind of levels of education do we usually encounter, and do we think they're influential? Do they affect it? Oh, I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. This is a good point being made by quite a few people. Steve and others are saying that the education levels within the group, each specific group, are oftentimes very similar because either the group has been chosen, sometimes we get the ability to pick our participants, or the group has been created through a business, for example. We do a workshop or a seminar, and they are people on a certain level within the organization. And that level oftentimes requires some sort of educational requirements, right? Or it is, yes, this is a good point, a lot of people are dealing with community groups, and a lot of times the people who have taken an interest, who need something, who want something, who have a purpose, are about the same in education level, especially a traditional one. Yes, and this is a good point. A lot of people are talking also not only of traditional education, as in I went someplace and got a certificate, got a degree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point, not even went someplace nowadays. We could be doing it online. And we've talked about this in prior shows, too, archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com, that a lot of times the education that is of great importance is really experience. Mm-hmm, yeah, experience levels. How have we seen this before, right? Yeah. I'm going to call all of these experience levels. People are telling me that they are more important than a piece of paper. Quite frankly, I think so too. Although there is a certain place for credentials, but experience, really being able to do something, is a very important education level, right? Yeah. So what kind of experience levels are we talking about within our group? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, Cynthia and others, are talking about what I would call cultural experience. The people in our group come from the same background, at least a lot of them do, and they bring with them having experienced a certain cultural opinion, for example, mm-hmm. their background in their religion sometimes, mm-hmm. Their family background, the group that they belong to as humans outside of our room. And a lot of times, there's quite a few people who share a very similar cultural background. No one's ever the same, of course, but it needs to be taken into account as experience. It's life experience, right? How we think things should be done, what we think is right, what we think is moral. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all, excuse me, ingrained cultural thoughts, cultural experience. Mm-hmm. People are making a demarcation, Colin and others, and thank you for all of your participation, between what I've called cultural and what people are calling personal. And that does, there is a difference. Yeah, people are saying that's not the same, and it isn't. A lot of people, Colin and others, are talking about personal relationships between members of the group that occurred before they got into our group, then affect the group dynamic, and maybe ongoing. They might be lovers. They might be not lovers, as they say. Yeah. They might, people in the group oftentimes have interacted before. They've known each other from past issues, past groups, because they share the same cultural or religious background, and they see each other, their families know each other. A lot of times this happens when we are dealing with organizations especially, right? Yeah. And good point that oftentimes it might even occur in business areas. We're doing a workshop or seminar or mediation, because not all businesses are not family-run, for example. Or they might have had a personal experience within the business context and have a real history together. Yeah, people are talking about divorces and lovers and things like that, maybe. But also maybe a history together due to transactions over time. It could be that they've done something personal. A lot of you have had divorced people within the group, which is an interesting dynamic, or people that are getting divorced or used to be together and aren't anymore. That's something that needs to come out right away, for example, because otherwise they will taint the group. Yeah, people are saying it's awful and they make the group fall apart. Well, not necessarily. But they need to be able to separate what needs to be done with the group and how much I dislike you, because we're going for the greater good. Mm-hmm. This is the part where you might think about making teams and not having them on the team, right? And getting together as a whole for team reports. Keeps a little bit of distance. Mm-hmm. People are saying you need to ask when to leave. Yep, I think that's an interesting idea. Depends if they are both needed to the group, what their position is within the group dynamic. All right, one's the boss, one isn't, right? And whether you need to ask them both to leave, which is actually... You know, I'm going to say the famous words that you guys say I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends. It depends because you don't want to make a sworn enemy of your group who will fight against your goal being successfully achieved, right? Depends. Sometimes people are in our group because of an exterior reason, and they don't really care that much. I mean, they'll do the work and like that, but they could join at a different time. For example, if we're doing seminars, a series, oftentimes I do a series. And if there is another one coming right up, or the series is starting. You know, I mean, sometimes I do the same. If it's a really big organization, for example, I do the same workshop and seminar more than once at different times. And you can suggest that perhaps they would like to go to different ones. One stay in this one and one go to the one on Tuesdays at 6, for example, you know? And oftentimes they don't care and they just as soon get away from each other. Or someone will not necessarily care if they are in this particular group because they're required by their job to come, but they can come at a different time. You see, if that's when it's not very hard to do. If it's something that is truly, truly seriously felt by both people, that's where we have the networking afterwards and the civility rules. The civility rules for those of you who are new. Hello, welcome. Basically speaking, are don't be rude to each other. And don't hijack the group for your own personal vendetta, right? Yeah. And we enforce the civility rules very hard. If somebody is really violating them, that is grounds for dismissal from the group. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's personal background. Sometimes it needs to come out in the open too, right? Because it's making a difference to the group dynamic, making a difference to whether we're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. Experience levels that are most important. A lot of people are saying that oftentimes people have similar experience levels. Yeah, that's the cultural and group one. It might be a work-related one. Mm-hmm. Anne and others and Lucy are talking about connections. Who do we know in the group? We're going to need some help with this. Let's think about it. And who do we have that we know who we can reach out to? Mm-hmm. A lot of times issues need that. We need to be able to reach out and see if we can get some opinion, some assistance. Someone, could you perhaps make a phone call on our behalf or connect with someone else on our behalf? You know, often, yes, that's a good point. Oftentimes this is necessary if we're going to deal with the media. Mm-hmm. We're going to say, well, we need to try to help this, to see if we can find somebody who can give us their experience, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we get together as a group, a lot of times we find that our connections are intertwined. Mm-hmm. A lot of us may know the same people or may know someone who can approach someone who is important to our cause. It can really make a connection with them, and we could invite them to the group, we could go to lunch, whatever it is that we need to do. Yeah. So connections are a very interesting experience level and a knowledge level and a people level, right? Yeah. Suki and others are talking about working together before. That's really the personal connection. We worked together before. It might not have been successful. We have to think about why and how to make this one a success. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of you are doing groups that have a same employer, and therefore there's shared memory in the group, shared experience in the group that is work-related. Mm-hmm. And that is a bond. And it's an interesting point that it also is a networking, a connection maker. And it's also prior dealings. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, this is a very good point. Hassan and others are making that this is where level of education really often comes in. Hassan says that the authority level is more important than formal education. The authority level. If you're working with a group that is even out and about in the even an organization, but especially if you're in a business, I usually do big organizations, international, offices, multinational type firms. People have connected before, and even if they haven't, and you say, well, everyone's equal in this group, right? We all know that secretly, underlying the group dynamic, that's not exactly true if you've got people that are different levels of authority within the organization. Or you've got different... I've seen that... The best example is really the military, because it's the easiest to look at. I've seen that with military groups. people say we're stripped of our rank, right? We're all just sitting here in T-shirts and jeans, and we are all equals in this room. Yeah, you're all going, but that's not true. It kind of isn't, because we're all humans, and we all know if you're a general and I'm a sergeant, and there's still deference made to the authority levels. Hussein is right, of course, and everyone agreed, because we live in the real world, and when we leave this room, the authority levels go back, even if you artificially say, well, we're all equals here. I'm Bob. But everybody in the room knows that Bob, when he leaves the room, is General Williams. Yeah, see? The authority levels come with. Sometimes it's a leader of an organization. But it does make deference to the authority level. The authority level also might be a traditional education, as being pointed out. The Bettina and others are pointing out that the leader's education level is an important credential. If someone in the room, for example, this happens on juries, which is why when you get called to jury duty in the United States, when you've got a trial that's got a jury, the attorneys for both sides do something called voir dire. They actually ask questions of potential jurors, and they can kind of pick who they think will be best for their case. And one of the things that's asked is, what do you do for a living? Because if you've got a lawyer in the bunch, for example, they're going to sway the jury just because they have the credential, right? Just because people go, well, we are laymen, we don't know how the law's supposed to be, but you're an attorney, you've had experience, but you could even be a brand new attorney. You've gone to law school, you've got the credential, help us through this process so we can all go home. You know, but it makes the credential creates an uneven level of authority. And that's where education is an interesting point. If you are quite unequal in education, there's someone in the room who is credentialed, they will be capable of swaying some of the opinion by using their experience based on their credential. That makes sense? Yeah. It's not necessarily, it might be real life experience, but their opinion will carry more weight. The good point. Yeah. Thomas and others are saying it's because their opinion will carry more weight because they're like an expert. And that's an interesting point about an educational credential. And the authority level of the leader goes to this, right? So our next question is coming up, because a lot of us are talking about, and thank you very much all for being here, and thank you for your participation. This show is, of course, not scripted, and we are very practical people, and we go wherever the conversation takes us, wherever you'd like to go. And so a lot of people are talking about the credentials, the education of the leader making a difference, because the leader is the authority figure within this group, right? Yeah. The leader is the one who is, well, setting the ground rules, keeping us in process, keeping us on track, helping us get our goal. And we oftentimes are the leader. So what's the impact of the leader's credentials? Ken and others are saying, and this is an interesting point, that when the leader has kind of good credentials, either educational credentials, actual traditional education, or experience credentials, it gives the leader the confidence to lead. Yeah. I feel that I can handle this. I feel that I'm really good at it. I feel that I really know what I'm doing. And that whatever comes across, it can be done. Yeah. It can be handled. we're going to be successful. We're going to be able to say, yeah, this is what needed to be done, and we've got it covered. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to assign you some tasks. We're going to delegate. Yeah, we've got it covered. We're going to reach out. This is who needs to be connected with. Yeah, we've got it covered. So it gives the leader confidence. It gives us confidence that we know what we're doing. We've got credentials and we've got experience, and it all adds up together. Yeah. And you know, the flip side of this, which a lot of you are talking about, yes, Cheryl and others, that when the leader is very well credentialed, it inspires participant confidence. You know what you're doing. We're going to follow you. A lot of times there are different groups that are trying to handle and have a successful goal that is very similar. And participants want to be in the winning group, let's face it. We want to be in the one that really gets somewhere. We want to be influencers, right? And participants will flock to you as leader if you have very good education in both credentials and in experience. It's impressive. Yes, thank you. Oh my, a lot of you saw that. Yes, I was on CNN the other day. It is a news network that is global, I think. And they ask opinions of people who someone in the organization has deemed a leader, right? Yeah. And so that goes to credentials and to publicity, yes, but also to accessibility and to being the spokesperson for an issue, an opinion, a side, so to speak. Yes, I did take a side. When we are leaders of a group, oftentimes we are the third party impartial, right? But sometimes somebody asks you your opinion about something, because you are deemed an expert. And it was an opinion about a mediation that was going on with the dock workers. And like that, we had a strike is kind of a big word. There was a union issue and there was a slowdown that was affecting the United States and shipments all over our country, and also shipments all over the world, because we import a lot and exports couldn't get in. They actually couldn't get big things like cars and stuff in, but all the ships were backed up because the dock workers were having a benefits of salary dispute with the owners, and it was dragging on and like that. And you can have an opinion about that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So credentials. You know, Laurel and others are saying it's really a use of credentials and education for dealing with the media and outsiders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about having a spokesperson for the group, right? And this has to do with confidentiality of the process. It has to do with having a uniform front, a uniform public idea. You need to have a spokesperson so that, you know, people say things off the cuff, right? And off the cuff being without thinking, just fast. And they are saying the same thing that the spokesperson would have said. But it gets taken wrong, mm-hmm. Taken out of context, especially if it was done in writing. Uh-huh. And that's one of the rules that we often have if it is a confidential, or just not that confidential, but we're working on it, right? It's kind of, I think it was the old Benjamin Franklin quote that people who love law and sausage should not see either one being made. It's messy in the middle of it. We're in the process, right? And so we need a spokesperson, and we always have the rule that we won't just blog and text and write down our opinions as we're sitting there about what someone said in writing in the internet, because that's for the whole world to see forever and ever. Mm-hmm. So we have the no reporting rule, and we like to designate a spokesperson for the group. And the media, for example, and other outsiders, but the media kind of drives this, they are impressed by actual credentials, by prior experience credentials, right? So we pick our most outwardly impressive person to be our spokesperson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, that's when a traditional credential looks nice. Mm-hmm. Or a fought the battle before and won type credential, right? Yeah. But you might notice that spokespeople are not only well-spoken, they don't kind of get excited when they see a camera fall apart or a interview of some sort. They're thoughtful. They never say anything without having discussed it before with the group. And they usually have fancy credentials, either experience or traditional-wise, or both. Yeah. Yeah, people are asking about my fancy credentials. They're like, yeah. Really, I got chosen because I have 2 law degrees. That's kind of a weird thing, which is traditional, right? And I have been in the business, been doing mediation negotiation for more than 30 years. That's experience. Uh-huh, yeah. So that's both. And it makes me kind of a good spokesperson for opinions, for groups. Yeah. Okay. Michael and others are saying the credentials also get you chosen as the leader. That's true. Sometimes a group has gotten together, but you're not really the third-party impartial that has been, well, is being paid, usually, to run the group, because that makes you the leader de facto. I'm the head of this. You're joining my group. This is how we're going to do it. Sometimes the leader is chosen by the group, and that's when credentials and education and experience come into effect. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are using the jury example that I used earlier in this show. And that is one of the things that will happen. The person who has the best credentials, which is why no lawyer is ever picked for a jury, will become the foreman, will become the leader of the jury deliberations. Mm-hmm. And it's within that context, it's oftentimes a position of power because it will sway people, right? Mm-hmm. Yep, a lot of people are talking about the credentials of the leader being experienced. Ing and others are talking about experience with the issues in the past. Sometimes the same issues came up in different circumstances. Sometimes an issue was unresolved before, but it's getting closer. Mm-hmm. We've used the marijuana industry several times as an example on this show, where there were quite a few groups that wanted to legalize marijuana, which has been illegal in this country, in the United States, for a very long time. They brought up the issues. Groups got together, and they tried to change the law at the federal level, which is a very good idea, because federal law trumps state law. You know, we have layers in this country. A lot of countries do. The same issues kept coming up, and the groups retreated and kept their leadership, kept their goal, but worked on the state level, which was very imaginative because marijuana is still illegal on the federal level, but it's legal in some states. What a concept. Yeah. And it was a refining of the issues, because you needed to get something that was actually technically illegal onto ballots for the voters to vote on. Mm-hmm. So that would be experience with the issues. Sometimes the experience comes from we've not gotten a resolve for a long time, but we're still working, right? Yeah. Brian and others are talking about the credentials of the leader can be experience with leadership. I can herd cats. I know it's a funny expression, but sometimes you need to have a leader who is experienced at dealing with all kinds of personalities, just like we are. We've been talking on this show for quite a while now, over the years, and we've gained experience in leading, experience in how to get a group of diverse individuals with diverse backgrounds, with different ideas, with all kinds of baggage, how to get them to be a unified team to work towards this successful goal. That's what we want to do. They need to work together at this point in time to get this done, whatever this is. You see? And that's the trick to it. The trick is to make it so that they can work together and we can get a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's a very good point. After you get the successful outcome, you all become each other's connections, right? Because you've worked together successfully, even though you might have been quite diverse, and you don't have much in common as humans. You don't have to be friends. That's not required. You know, I say right up front at the beginning of the show, in that little few words that I say, that you don't have to be friends. You just have to be willing participants. But you are, forever and ever after that, acquaintances and connections for the next time something needs to be done. Mm-hmm. You're each other's connections, right? And you'd be surprised. Sometimes similar issues come up, or there's issues between the groups that are not the same, but it's the same groups, right? And it gives you someone to connect with and to ask questions of, and to bring into the new whatever needs to be done. Yeah. So that's kind of exciting, actually, that you are now important to each other. Kind of forever, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you get your prior experience gives you connections now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Prue and others are saying that a lot of times the leader is selected, the credential, is that they're an experienced negotiator. Not only experience with leadership, and experience maybe with the issues, but experienced negotiator. You know how to bring in the outside and deal with them, right? Yeah. Maybe the negotiator within the group, it's a good point. That is, maybe the leadership is a negotiation skill. So that we can go forward and not get kind of backtracked by our personal opinions of each other and like that. Negotiation might be involved, yeah. And also we want to decide what our goal is. And that's a negotiated process. The credentials of the leader can be experience because quite a few people, Kelly and others, are talking about the fact that the leader could have had a prior success. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's prior experience. It's a good point. We talk about this on the show a lot. Sometimes the leader might have had a prior failure. Now you say to yourself, why on earth would that be a good credential? You were dumb and you didn't make it. Sometimes the failure is not so much the leader's fault, or something might have changed, some circumstance, some outside circumstance might have changed. What happened with marijuana is the groups couldn't get the federal government to budge. The federal government is very... Well, I'm going to call them squeamish. A lot of you are using adjectives that that I can't say on this show. But they don't like to change things like that very much. First of all, they'll have to be elected. And a lot of them come from highly conservative states that might object to marijuana being legalized, right? we couldn't get the federal government to budge, but opinion kind of changed from when we worked on it for, like, I don't know how long, for years, for decades. And the prevailing opinion of the public changed because medical marijuana was being touted, not just recreational. And enforcement became, it was still illegal, but in certain areas of the country, certain states, enforcement became what they call low priority. It meant that they didn't seek out enforcing marijuana just for people using it for private use, for example. You see, that's a temperature change. That's a dynamic change. That's a change that allows another try to get what failed before now passed, right? It's an outside circumstances change. Mm-hmm. And opinion kind of changed, public opinion. And that was an important shift in order to try again. So sometimes the leader has had prior success, but sometimes they have prior failure, but they're still interested. And sometimes, if the leader has had a prior failure, maybe more than once over the years with this particular topic, this particular cause, it makes them more involved, more invested, more determined. Yeah. And that's a good leadership skill. To be really, really determined, to be really interested, to really, really want this and try very hard and work very diligently and pull out all the times, even if there's been a failure in the past, connections have been made. And, you know, you don't start from the first part, first square. You know how the expression, you don't start from square one? Because you've already gotten somewhat far, and then it didn't quite make it, but let's start from there and work forward, you see? So sometimes failure is a very good credential. It's an experience education credential. I know what didn't work. This is what I thought I should have done in retrospect, but it was too late. Let's start from that point and see if it was true or see if there's something else that needs to be done. You see? Yeah. So we've talked a lot about credentials and experience in education. How can we assess this? How do we know when that's the thing that we're interested in? How do we make a judgment about credentials and experience and who's going to lead us and how much these things should have sway, should have influence over the group, over what we do? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how can we do this? How can we know what's good? Mm-hmm. And how can we judge what's valuable? Mm-hmm. Kareem and others are saying by results. Yeah, that's a real practical idea. We'll have to look to past results when we're first starting out, right? But we can look to results as we go along in this process, too. And it's a very good point that this would never happen to us because, of course, we are very, very good at what we do. But sometimes the group dynamic changes and sometimes the leaders change. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need to know, especially if the process is very ongoing, you need to know when you need to bring in new leaders to either help you or to be groomed to take over. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've brought the group as far as you can, the leader, and there's someone else willing to go forward from there, and they would be the right person at the right time. Go for it. Because the goal is always to get to the successful conclusion, the successful outcome. And it doesn't really make any difference who gets you there so long as we get there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the leader remains influential within the group and to assist the new leader so that we can get the job done. That's what happened, and I must confess, on a certain personal level, and you have to know these things about yourself. I kind of resent it. I do. And you have to take that into account and really realize that yourself, about yourself, when you're in any kind of a group, or just a human being, right? I mean, we're people. But the results are what matters. I've talked about Rotary before and how we made a really big push for polio, to eradicate polio from the face of the earth. Long process, many years, millions of dollars. I'm telling you, thousands of connections and contacts all over the world, because you have to deal with governments, you have to deal with vaccine suppliers. You have to deal with groups to get there. You have to deal with all kinds of logistics. We fought on. There was really thousands of Rotarians that went personally to help with the cause and vaccinate people. There was all kinds of, we were really, it was our goal to eradicate polio from the face of the earth. We've talked about how interesting that goal is and how it started smaller because nobody could get their mind around eradicating a thing like polio everywhere. But we forged on, and as we forged on into different areas, we learned things. We had successes, mostly successes, some failures too. We took some steps back. It was hard. It was time-consuming. It was expensive. Rotary really put in the lion's share and started the ball rolling and was very determined as a group, as people, as organizations. It was our service above self goal. We do other nice things for other places in the world, like water and things, but polio was really a defining moment for our group. We got really, 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 really close, but you're not done until there's nobody in the world that has contracted polio. I think the rule is for a couple of years, right? I can't remember how many, but if no one in the world, big deal, right, has polio for a certain number of years, then we're considered eradicated, right? Yeah, good thing. At the last minute, which is kind of now, I mean, it's not like the last 5 seconds, but the last few years, after we got this close to eradicating polio, and but we needed to have the final push, the Gates Foundation gave some money and a tremendous amount of hoopla and media. And they're taking credit for eradicating polio and ignoring Rotary. Well, all right, you got to set your personal circumstances aside. After all, there's lots of Rotarian leaders that worked really hard. But you know the name of the Gates Foundation, bum-de-dum, and they put in a lump sum of money that seems very impressive but is mainly going towards, I suppose that's unfair to say, but a lot of it's going towards kind of media hype, and they're taking credit and ignoring all the work that was done all those years by a little group, little in comparison to Gates, of determined individuals, because that's really what we are. We're a bunch of clubs that have an overseeing international foundation. But really, we don't deal with them very much. We are local people in local clubs band together to do good in the world. And we fought to eradicate polio because we could all see it was a good thing, right? All over the world. But we are not media savvy like the Gates Foundation. But the goal looks like it might have been reached. No one on the face of this earth has contracted polio for 1 year. Now, isn't that a wonderful thing? That's the goal. That's success. Who takes credit for it? Who leads it? is irrelevant. No one on the face of this earth contracted polio for a whole year. No one's going to be crippled by it. Now, we're still vaccinating just because it's important to keep it going until we're sure. But wow, because we're vaccinating babies. No one has contracted polio for a whole year, anywhere. We might have eradicated it. And the leadership shifts. The Rotarian leadership shifts. Do you get tired? You get old. You get busy. It gets passed on. You see? Yeah. So anyway, so results is how to assess credentials and experience and what needs to be done. Good. Gates Foundation, a good thing. How else? We're getting kind of close on time. That's all right. Well, it's a good discussion. And if we don't quite make it to both recipes, we'll get the other one, as we all know. Yeah, I know. Thank you all for being here. As we all know, we will get to the other one the next time. So how do we otherwise assess credentials and education requirements and leadership requirements and like that? Heather, another saying, by willingness to use the knowledge and to give the work and the time. Yeah, people call this practical value. Sometimes somebody knows something or they've got credentials and they're unwilling to help. Well, that's nice. We don't care about you if you're not going to help. I mean, you have to be willing to share. You have to be willing to use your knowledge, right? Yeah, and sometimes they want to be paid. Now, that's a different kettle of fish. Alberto and others are talking about experts require the group consensus. That's how we assess their credentials. Yes, if you need to have an expert called in, you need to have the group agree, kind of, that this person is an expert. And sometimes experts are people who are in the community who are very interested, who do not want to be a part of the group because of time constraints, for example. or maybe privacy issues. But they're willing to give an opinion. They're willing to use their knowledge to help further you along faster than you would able to go without their input, right? And sometimes they want the input to be anonymous, which is why they don't want to be part of the group. But the group needs to agree that this person is an expert in this particular issue. Maybe not a traditional credential either, maybe an experienced expert, but an expert nonetheless. Yeah. Gwen and others are saying that you need group consensus for the leader for the expert as well as the leader designation. Yeah. The credentials and education requirements assessment sometimes is also made by an employer, right? You are given the leader. You are given, well, the workshop and seminar leader, for example, right? You are given the mediator. Has been called in. You don't get to it. You take on face value that they have been vetted, that their credentials and experience are good, right? Yeah. Linda and others are saying that you assess education usefulness can only be done by assessing the level of experience. Assessing education usefulness can only be done by assessing level of experience. Okay, maybe. We're getting some agreement. Yeah, this is an interesting point that's being made by quite a few people. You can be quite experienced in the area, but not experienced in this specific type of issue, or your experience might actually make you kind of not such a good leader. If it's a group, it might be affecting the group dynamic. If you have credentials and experience and it's made you inflexible, yeah? I've seen that happen. It's very human. I've been in the business a really long time. I've been a negotiator. I've been a lawyer for more than 30 years. I try very hard to really, really think about this and to really make a point of coming to each new situation with new eyes and not come in with a preconceived notion of what we're going to do and let's get it done. Because no matter how much experience I have and how much credential, every group is different. Every situation is different. All circumstances, although they are similar, are not exactly the same, right? This favorable sentence about new eyes and not bringing in a whole bunch of baggage about what happened last time and the time before cannot always be said about my brethren, sistren too, my co-leaders, my co-mediators, negotiators. So sometimes experience creates a bias, right? That needs to be overcome. That needs to be, I know what's going to happen here. Let's just do it this way because it always works this way. No, not necessarily. You see, and that makes a big difference. The really assessing the usefulness of the experience and the education. Whether or not this person really isn't listening. Because they know it all. They've seen it before. There comes a time when some people have that. They're just kind of know-it-alls. I don't think so. Yeah. A lot of you are arguing that it's more important to be experienced than the type of degree. Felicity says that the only degree that matters is a professional credential because it validates opinions. Some professional credentials, of course, give you a background, a basis of knowledge in order to keep up your knowledge. A lot of times that there are continuing education requirements even. Yeah, lawyers have that, doctors, accountants, other kinds of professionals. Certainly a professional degree makes your opinion at least worth talking about because you've learned all about it before you hit this group and therefore you have a different perspective. Yeah. So that's a degree that is oftentimes practical and oftentimes matters to the group. People are saying that the degree that matters is professional and it validates your opinion. And Alex says that the experience that goes with that credential creates a track record. It also shows whether or not the track record of success, mostly we hope, some few failures, your track record also shows your, I have to say this, not people call it bias, but it's really like a personal philosophy. How you think, what kinds of groups you've dealt with, what the outcomes were. It kind of makes an opinion as to whether or not, well, you're very conservative, you're very liberal, what you think is right. You see, it speaks for you. Your experience and your track record, especially if you're a professional. Juan and others say that it also shows your ability to cope with the real world. And that's really a statement of practicality, that we can do this because we've seen that you can handle it, that you're a real world, real practical thinker. And that really goes to the process, doesn't it? Towards leading to the next step, the next level. What is it that we need to do next in order to accomplish our goal, in order to have a successful conclusion. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the real world, we also understand that sometimes it takes a little longer, that we need to take the steps forward as they come, and that each one of those is a success. Mm-hmm. And it's like anything. Sometimes issues are very complicated, and they take a while to process. Sometimes they're real straightforward. You want to get something on the ballot, but it still is a process, and you have to keep going forward on it. So experience is a track record, and it needs to be practical and real world. I am afraid that I have a bias, and I know it, so I think about it very carefully. But oftentimes, someone promotes themselves to our groups as an expert, and they are from academia. They are teachers. They are people who have written papers and maybe even books. I mean, they've been published. They're very interesting. I lean towards practical experience unless we're really talking about naked research that has not had practical experience because there was no way of getting it. Medical, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know that that's my bias, to have practical real-world experience in addition to the fancy academic credential. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to run out of time, so I'm just going to read kind of the final say on this, and we're going to do the recipes next week, hopefully. But it was such a good conversation. I hate to interrupt to talk about cooking. Helen says that we combine all levels of knowledge to create a team and a strong group dynamic for success. That's it. We take the credentials, we take the experience, we combine all levels of knowledge and education to create a team and a strong group dynamic for success. That's the key to it. Everybody's an expert in something. Everybody's had experience in something. A lot of times we have people in the group who have actually learned very deeply about something. Mm-hmm. All of this is valuable to us. All of this is information that we're going to use to create a successful outcome, to reach our goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we will go forward. And even when we disband as a group because our goal has been met, we're still each other's connections, which is a wonderful thing for the next time issues come up. Yeah. So, we now know that we're all going to make a team, which is really what the group dynamic is. It's making a team to go forward. My friends, we are nearly out of time. I want to thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the prior shows are archived on our website. Yes, it's quite a list. recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.